gave you a chance to fix his mistakes. That's coming up next right here on The Right Stuff. Showcasing Christian authors from all over the world. England, Canada, India, Thailand, UK, USA. It's Tuesday night, and this is The Right Stuff. With your host, the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J. Cole. Hi, and welcome to The Right Stuff. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, Parker J. Thank you so much for being with me. We are going to have a fantastic time as we give you that very provocative question I said at the beginning of the show. What if God gave you a chance to fix his mistakes? You may be wondering, Parker, what in the world are you talking about? Does God really make mistakes? Well, when people are hurting through some sort of trauma, they may feel as if God doesn't have a clue as to how this thing called life is supposed to work out. And that's one of the premises in today's book that we are highlighting called Three Prayers for Jacob. Jacob is given the rare opportunity to, as he says, fix God's mistakes. So what happens when he goes to fix God's mistakes? I can't wait to tell you about it in just a few moments. As always, I want to thank our corporate sponsor, Christian Book Club, for their support. To find out how they can help you build your readership, go to christianbookclub.net. We also want to thank our partner, Readio App. That app will be live coming soon, but still go ahead and upload your catalog to the app by going to readioapp.com. We want to definitely thank our Patreon team for their support. If God is leading you to give to this ministry, go to patreon.com/rightstuff and see how you can donate to this ministry as we showcase Christian authors worldwide. As I said last week, my birthday is coming up on April 21st, and I will be giving away to a reader a load of Kindle with most of the books that we've had on this show over the years uploaded onto that Kindle. So stay tuned right there to find out how you can win, get a chance to win a Kindle Fire with loaded content from The Right Stuff over the years. For authors who are listening and want to put their books into the Kindle, you just simply contact me and I'll be glad to help you facilitate that giving to our fortunate reader who will get the Kindle Fire. As always, if you want to weigh in on our topic, you know you can. All you got to do is call in at 646-668-8485, then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag RightStuff, with your question or comment. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The SpecFaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guest.
Hi, and welcome. welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. So glad you're here with me as we chat with my guest, co-host, and contributor today, Vance Kessler. You may remember him from a few weeks or a few months prior when we talked about his book, My First 10,000 Years in Heaven. He's back again to share with us three prayers for Jacob. And the premise is this, and I use it rather loosely, of course, but I just wanted to give you an idea of what this book is about. What if God gave you a chance to correct his mistakes? And I say that because when we are dealing with something that's traumatic in our lives, we may feel as if God really doesn't have a clue. And for our main character, Jacob Burton, in this book, he basically is railing against God and said, God is an idiot. God does not have all power. He just doesn't understand. And so because he rails against God, God gives him a rare opportunity. He gives him three prayers, and we're going to talk about that with my good friend, Vance Kessler. Vance, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Parker. How are you?
I am fine, and once again, thank you for being with me on the show. Really enjoyed this book, Three Prayers for Jacob, which is available on Amazon.com. or wherever books are sold. And Vance, I gotta tell you, you got a really provocative book here because you are delving into some theological discussions that people like to shy away from or provide cliche answers for questions that do not have easy answers to them. So I have to ask before we get into the book, what made you decide I'm going to write this particular story?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for having me on your show again. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, there's several things that came together as a basis for this book. First, one of the main threads in my science fiction series that I wrote is that we can never limit God by what we imagine him being capable of, especially since he's not limited by time as we are. One of my favorite verses is Ephesians 3:20. Which says he is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine. So anything our little minds can think of, he can do far more than that. So I always try to think of God doing, incredible things. So the second idea that came into play was the role of God plays in suffering that occurs in our lives. Shortly before I wrote this book, I'd been teaching some classes in Sunday school about evil and suffering and, why we have evil and that kind of thing. So those thoughts were kind of stirring in my head. And then those two thoughts kind of came together, and I started kind of wondering, and this isn't particularly what the book is about, but it's something that I do think about, is what if we prayed for something that has already happened? And could we ask God to change that since he's outside time? I have no clue if that's true or not. And even if he did answer that prayer, we'd not even know we prayed it. But that made me start thinking about how many times we do pray and our prayers are answered by a chain of events that happened before we ever said that prayer. So one example I have is once we were hit with a pretty significant financial burden, in the thousands. I prayed in the evening that happened, I prayed that God would help us through. The very next day, a check arrived in the mail within dollars of the amount that we owed, and we had no clue that money was coming. So that check had to have been sent days before I said that prayer, even though, like I said, so God was working before I ever prayed. So, and Parker, you probably have instances where that's happened as well.
Totally, sure. I always think about stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
The last concept that kind of tied in was when I wrote my first book about heaven, I started thinking about just everything in life through an eternal perspective. And so I tried to apply that eternal perspective to the things that we suffer in our lives. And so all of those kind of thoughts are kind of threaded throughout this book.
Thoughts are really very down to earth. What people would say when they're dealing with something. Before we get some more deeper into the story, I've already given people an idea what the book is about, but reading this book is going to take you on this really fast-paced journey where you're following Jacob as he begins to understand what these prayers are all about. And the other question I had to ask you was, the whole thing about evil and suffering. This is something a lot of people, particularly right now, for those of us in the pandemic, a lot of people are asking this question. People have lost loved ones. People have been hurt. Just yesterday, we had the shooter in Colorado, and those people passed away. We had another shooting within the week, another shooting, and so people are just in an uproar. They're worried, and then we have all this unrest between international politics, and you have all these things happening. So there's so much unrest, there's so much suffering. You have just chaos all around you, and I can't help but wonder how many people are saying and railing at God, why, if you're supposed to be there, why do these horrible things happen? And as you tackled that question, what were some of the things that God revealed to you that you can share with our listeners? Because I'm pretty sure our listeners are probably asking the same thing.
Right. There's different types of suffering, and some are easier to understand why they happen than others. So, like, when someone goes out and starts shooting people, or if someone just gets mad at work and yells at somebody or punches somebody, those actions affect other people, even though they could be perfectly innocent or not have anything to do with the reasons that drove that person to commit those actions. And so that's just a consequence of God allowing us to have free will and to make choices. If God is going to give us the chance to make choices, some people will make bad choices. And so the only way to avoid bad things happening in the world would be for God to remove our possibility to make bad choices, which would also remove our ability to choose to love him. Free will pretty much explains why there's suffering caused by others. Now, the harder thing to explain is natural suffering, or things like, you know, tsunamis, earthquakes, or the coronavirus. I don't know if anybody has a great answer for that. We live in a world full of sin, and sin brings death and sickness and disease. And so, we're going to have death and sickness and disease while we're here. And so things like the coronavirus will happen. Now, why does God not step in and stop it? Nobody can answer that question. But I'm sure he has, in certain cases, limited the effect of coronavirus on someone or prevented someone from having it, but we can never know until we get to heaven if he's done that or not.
Well, one thing, too, if I can wade in this very dark water here, I think that understanding that sin is in the world, that we have to live in a life that is susceptible to sin and how sin affected nature, too. And some people say, well, that's not a good enough answer. And like you said, we don't really have a good enough answer. You see what I'm saying? It's not like the answer and this is why. It's not like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where she says 42, right? It's not that. After 7 million years, the robot comes with 42. But what we have is the fact that we have to trust that God knows it better than we can. But then some people, Vance, may say, that is just a cliche. I'm supposed to trust God while my family is suffering. I'm supposed to trust God when, as we heard stories, whole families were taken out by the corona. I'm supposed to trust God when I don't have a job and I can't feed my family. I'm supposed to just trust God. And you hear that, and they say, I'm trying to trust God, but he's not giving me anything to work with. And so that kind of mirrors our character, Jacob. Like, okay, I halfway believe in you. I think you're real, but obviously you just don't have enough power. And for Jacob, he seems to find comfort in that. So tell us about that thought process where we think God is real, but he's just not sovereign in everything that we do.
Well, most people like the concept of heaven and going, having a nice afterlife. So they don't really want to rule God out completely. But then they see things going on in their life, like you said, that cause pain and suffering. They don't like it. And it's hard to explain those things. And so sometimes they just say, well, I guess, maybe they're deist and thought, okay, God created all this, but he's just kind of sitting back and isn't active. But then, like I said, they don't want to throw out the whole concept of God completely because they do like the concept of afterlife and having something to look forward to after this life. It's hard to, when suffering is going on in your life, very hard to be thankful to God for that suffering. But as James tells us, you know, through suffering we'll have good results. And, you know, Romans 8:28 tells us, you know, good will can come out of it. We just have to make it through and trust him and allow him to be with us as we go through it. And he never promised us, you know, if we have faith in him, that bad things are not going to happen. Actually, Jesus promised the opposite. He said, you know, if you believe in me, you will suffer in my name. So if people did come to faith and all of a sudden, you know, nothing bad happened to them anymore, then everyone would you know, be believing just because of the benefits, not because of they believed in God or wanted or loved God.
Amen. I like the fact that you said that, Vance. It made me think of the verse where it says, tribulation worketh patience and experience hope. And you kind of said, how does tribulation get the hope? You know, how does that work? And mm-hmm. he shows it very clearly. He said, tribulation worketh patience. Patience for what? And patience experience. Experience from what? And experience hope. And he said, hope maketh not ashamed because the love of God that dwells abroad in our hearts. And I'm trying to remember the rest of the verse, but it escaped me right now. But it shows what happens when we go through tribulation. It's sort of the same thing like a child that has to walk. When a child learns to walk, the only way he learns to walk is that he falls. And that's the only way he learns to walk, because when he falls, he or she falls, he has to what? Get back up. He has to get his own strength. But if he didn't fall, if he just started walking, he wouldn't know what it feels like to hit different surfaces. He wouldn't know how to work around different areas. There's a lot of learning experiences going on when a child's learning how to walk and crawl and walk, I should say.
Yep.
And it's almost that if we didn't have anything happen to us, we would take for granted this life that we have. It's not an easy answer. And I'm glad that the Lord used you to tackle this in a very unique way with three prayers for Jacob. And before we get into this book again, I want to touch on real quickly about, because when someone's reading this book, they're going to actually ask certain questions, I think. One of the questions they're going to ask is about predeterminism. And that's a biggie within the Christian church, because you have your quote-unquote Calvinist who say, you know, we're all predetermined. God chose you. You didn't choose him and all that. There is no way you could have chose God, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then we run into this brick wall of free will that we can't ignore, right? Like we ran into right. it. Like, that's why I have this thing. I think both of them exist. They both exist in a unique way we can't quite comprehend. I had a pastor tell me a couple of days ago, he said, the reason why many are called but few are chosen is because many aren't willing to take up the call. You know what I mean? And so I thought about that as a really good rejoinder to these kind of questions of free will and predeterminism. So you do go into that a little bit, but one thing I love that you have said in your books, you say, this is a work of fiction. I don't act as if I know all the answers. I don't want anyone to think this is what I think it's all about. And what you write the books for is to get people to think. And that's definitely something that you do in Three Prayers for Jacob. You definitely start to think. And I got to tell you, to our listeners out there, Jacob is a very frustrating character, but he's so alive and so vibrant. He just leaps off the page. His whole personality leaps off the page very quickly. And as you follow him along in this journey, on the outside looking in, you just want to strangle him. But on the inside, you understand his thought processes. And Vance, you did such a good job with Jacob making his character become really fleshed out. And not just his character, even though we view everything through Jacob's eyes, just the rest of his other characters that he interact with, his family, come through as well. There's a scene in here where Jacob realized that his wife has always wanted him to do something. And to be quite frank, because you are so in his mindset, you had no idea she had the same thought too, because you discovered it along with Jacob. And I love when books give us that information that we didn't know before. And so you did an excellent job with this story. So let's talk about Three Prayers for Jacob. What has happened to Jacob that he, when we first opened the book, he is in a fit of anger, rage, bitterness, and grief?
Yeah, so his daughter was killed in what he sees as a senseless car accident. And she was a believer. She had faith in God. And so his thought is, you know, she loved you. Why did you let her die in this pointless accident? And he sees no benefit or no reason God would allow that. And, well, of course, we get into later, we can't understand everything God understands, but that's later in the book. But in his limited point of view, from what he understands of should happen, he thinks God's an idiot for allowing that to happen because he can see no point in it.
And in him not seeing any point in it, he just rails against God. And there's a scene in there, and I probably should not have laughed, Vance, because it's a serious scene, but I was there. And this woman horribly, horribly gives him this cliche advice, this cliche comment, thinking that she's comforting him. And he looks at her, and he goes off completely. He just goes off. And then everyone at the funeral is looking at him, and he's like, oh, gosh, because he was already having a hard time keeping it together. He's trying to keep it together. And then the woman says her comment. Next thing you know, he loses it. And then I could just see all the people in the funeral going, whoa. And they don't know what to say because he's grieving. And then he walks out. And I thought, you know what? I've probably been to funerals like that, too, because funerals are interesting events in life. There's people that, a lot of people that you know show up at funerals. Even people you don't know show up at funerals. Go ahead.
Yeah, and one reason I wrote that is because I've been the person who said stupid things before. And then later on go, oh, why did I say that to them? That didn't help. And so part of this book is obviously to help people who are going through suffering to, trust God more, and hopefully that will give them some comfort. But it's also on the other side, if you know someone who's suffering, try to think about what you say. Don't just throw cliches at them and think about, what if I was in their position, what would I want to hear and what do I need? And it might just be a hug, might not even be words. But that was, I try to approach it from both sides.
I remember when a friend of ours, his sister had passed away. She had died suddenly after she caught some kind of infection that affected the rest of her body. And all we did was show up at the viewing, me and my husband. That's all we did was show up at the viewing. And our friend just bawled crying because he just wanted us there. We didn't need to say anything. We didn't have to do anything. It was just having our presence that was important because he wasn't alone. We couldn't go to the funeral itself. We came to the viewing. And sometimes just that show of support is better than anything you can say. Unless the Lord leads you, just be what they need you to be at that time. And I've had several shows about grief with Gary Rowe, and he talks about how you just have to be so sensitive to people's grief. And in the line, as Jacob is dealing with his grief, he's trying to just get through this process. There happens to come a young man who was really affected by Chloe's death. Who is that young man?
So she had kind of knew a person from school named Jaden, who she bumped into shortly before the accident. And he was kind of, this isn't the first chapter, so it's not really much of a spoiler. He was actually involved in the accident as well because he was in the car behind her. And he becomes a little bit bigger part in the story later. But at the beginning, though, he just seems to be, a random person who was involved in this accident, but at least starts to, at that point, question the path he was on because Chloe, the daughter who died, was talking to him about Jesus and trying to point him in the right direction just before she died.
And so what happens is that Jacob is so angry. He's so angry. He's filled with rage. And he basically says God's an idiot. And he says some pretty wild stuff. He says some stuff that we may go, whoa, he should not have said that. And I was so glad you had him talk the way he did. I could tell some Christians would be like, oh, I can't believe Vance wrote that in the story. I said, no, I think I'm glad that he did because these are actual thoughts that people have had. And so let's talk about one of the things that he said. I'm going to see if I can find it because I highlighted it earlier in the story. He said some pretty harsh things, and we may go, I can't believe that. Go ahead.
Yeah, while you're looking, I mean, one reason I wrote that or put that in there is because, we all have thoughts about God, doubts or, we're angry at him at times for things happening. And he knows that. He knows our thoughts. And so, you know, it's telling him is actually more honest than going to him with some, you know, pretty prayer that you think he wants to hear rather than, you know, what you're actually thinking.
Exactly. I'm just going to read a part here. The lady just made the comment. The comment she made was, she grabbed my hand in both of hers and patted it. Trust that God is in control. He must have needed another beautiful angel up there. I ripped my hand back from her. My voice started quietly. You think God wanted to smash my little girl into a bloody pulp? Would he have another angel to play with among the tens of thousands he already has? My voice increased in volume with each word. You think God planned to kill my precious baby because, what? He was lonely? The nerve of some people. I yelled now, but I didn't care. I could handle stupidity no longer. God didn't plan this. If he did, he's an idiot or he's sadistic. That's the stupidest thing anyone has said all night, and I've heard a lot of stupid things, trust me. And then we pushed down later. What was I doing? I'd yell at a little 90-year-old lady. What was happening to me? The woman had been spouting nonsense, though. Why would God want my precious angel to die like garbage in the trash compactor? And she'd been so young. No way that was God's will. If it was, then God couldn't possibly love her or me. He was an uncaring jerk, or he was totally clueless. And that was just one of the excerpts from Three Prayers for Jacob, which is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. You're definitely going to enjoy it. When we come back, we're going to delve more into how Jacob is given the opportunity, as he says, to fix God's mistakes and what that journey is for him. If you want to weigh in on a topic, you know you can. All you got to do is call in at 646-668-8485. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Have you read the latest issue of SOARMAG Digital, the award-winning literary magazine for multicultural readers and writers? SOARMAG Digital is available quarterly and showcases interviews with the best authors in multicultural literature. SOARMAG Digital features craft and business articles for those interested in writing. If you're looking for a good book, check out our book reviews on what's hot in multicultural literature. For writers looking for new readers to get in front of, SOARMAG Digital is the perfect place to introduce your book. We offer advertising spaces that fit your promotional budget. Get your free subscription on SOARMAG.com or order a print issue on MagCloud.com. If you would like more information about SOARMAG Digital, check us out on SOARMAG.com or contact us at SOARMAG@Yahoo.com. SOARMAG Digital is the magazine for multicultural readers and writers.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guests.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Today, we're talking to my guest co-host and contributor, Vance Kessler. He is the author of the book, Three Prayers for Jacob. And basically, it has a very provocative premise. What if God gave you the chance to correct his mistake? He's made a huge mistake in letting his daughter die. And obviously, God doesn't have a clue, according to Jacob Burton, in Three Prayers for Jacob. You can pick up this book by going to Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And Vance, once again, thank you for being with me on the show to delve into this topic that discusses in a very enjoyable, entertaining way a very serious subject about pain and suffering. And before the break, we talked about how Jacob was so infuriated. And I read an excerpt just how infuriated it was. He basically said God's a jerk or he's sadistic. And people may say, I can't believe that Vance wrote that. But like you said before the break, God's aware of our thoughts. He knows what we're thinking. It's not a surprise to him. If anything, when we're being honest, that's the best place to be because we're being honest with our feelings as well as with our concerns to the Lord. And so Jacob is given a interesting response. So what happens to Jacob? Because he left the funeral home. He went outside to get a breather after this huge blow up. What happens after that?
Yeah, so God basically tells him, well, if you think I'm not doing a good job, I'll let you see if you can do any better. And he gives him three prayers to that he can use to change anything in his past any way he wants to. There are a few limitations on those prayers, but not much. And so, of course, what he wants is his daughter back. So he immediately, God, okay, make it so my daughter didn't die in a car accident. And of course, he can only see his limited point of view. And so there's consequences that result from that that he had no clue about.
And what I like about the story, it has that lovely feel of the butterfly effect. It has the feel of the story, I kind of want to say the monkey paw. That's a very famous story. It has the feel of Groundhog Day, and it has a sci-fi feel, like in the movie with Tom Cruise. What was that movie with the aliens, with the blue blood? The Edge of Tomorrow. The Edge of Tomorrow. It has all that feel, but in a Christian context. And I love this story, and I love how each time we experience something through Jacob's eyes, it's not quite what we thought. And for Jacob, the only thing he wanted back was his daughter, but he didn't see the consequences of that. So in the first, because he has three prayers, God gives him three prayers, and he did put some restrictions on those prayers. One of the restrictions that he put was that you could not interfere with free will. That's pretty obvious in the beginning of the book. So he asked for his daughter back. And I could just tell from any parent who has lost a child, that would be something they would love to just hold their child again, hold their loved ones again. And when he has that first prayer answered, all of a sudden he is just overwhelmed and everyone thinks something's wrong with him. When he asks for his daughter back, he actually goes back in time, which has that sci-fi feel to it. So what happens when he sees his daughter again that in his mind just yesterday they were about to go to her funeral the next day? Tell us about what's going on in his head.
Right. So I wanted it to be a little interesting. So when he did go back in time a little bit, but then I had it so that he didn't really realize immediately that he had gone back in time. And I also had it so that his memories continued from where he was, his point of view. So he didn't have memory of the changes that had happened since his prayer. So there was still the car accident that happened the night before he enters this new timeline. But then he walks out into the kitchen, and you know his wife is in the kitchen, and then his son is in the kitchen, and he's starting talking to him about, you know, things that would be related to going to a funeral. And they don't quite, he didn't exactly say that. And so they're all looking at him, kind of wondering what he's talking about. And then his daughter walks in, and of course he's completely blown away and finally realizes, oh God, those prayers that he gave me, that vision that I had, actually was true. My Chloe's back. And so, you know, of course he's overwhelmed and, you know, full of joy and extremely happy to see her. But then he has to kind of figure out, you know, okay, well, what's this going to mean? What's this new life going to be like? I need to, now that I have her back, you know, what should I be doing different? And so he has to figure all that out.
And one of the things that happened is Jacob has a certain view about God that I think was really important for you to delve upon. And that view about God is that, yes, he's there, but he's not concerned about the minutiae of our day. He's not sovereign. Basically, he has a deistic, or as we would call it now, agnostic view about God. Even though he goes to church, even though his daughter is a Christian, even though his wife is a Christian, he's more so like, okay, whatever, God's real, but he's just not capable of handling all this information. And why was this an important part of Jacob's journey, understanding whether or not God is sovereign in our lives?
Let me think about that. There's lots of plan to that. Well,
yeah.
First of all, if he did think God was in control and his daughter died, I mean, he has to reconcile him doing that. So either you can think, okay, God is in control and she died for a reason, or he's not in control and she died for no reason. And, of course, he goes with the other side of you know, thinking God must not really care because she loved him, if she was faithful, you know, God wouldn't allow that to happen if he really was in control, according to his point of view. And then, of course, as he moves throughout the story and as he tries to fix, you know, these mistakes that he thinks God has made, he starts realizing how, you know, his actions affect a whole lot of other people, and that, okay, well, maybe, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, maybe God does.
But it comes as such an interesting, it's an interesting scenario, interesting cases that happen. So just so, I don't want to give too much away of the story. So I talked to Vance during the break. I said, we'll just mention just one aspect that happened in the altered timeline, because now the timeline has changed. Instead of his daughter dying, someone else died. And let's go ahead and reveal who died instead of his daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty early in the story, so we can talk about this. So we had mentioned the boy who walked up to him at the funeral. He was injured in the accident because in the original timeline, he was in the car right behind her, and he actually hit the car as well and was injured. And his daughter had been talking to him about Jesus and possibly coming to faith, and he was starting to head down some bad paths and hang out with some bad company at that point. But then once Jacob prayed and his daughter was saved, then she was the car behind him instead. And so Jaden was the boy, was killed instead in the accident. And so then he has to start struggling with the fact that, okay, yeah, I prayed to have my daughter back, but that meant this other boy died. So he paid the price for my wanting my daughter back.
And what starts to happen is that Chloe was really affected by him in this other time, in this new timeline. Chloe was really affected by Jaden's death. And I don't feel like this is a big spoiler because it comes pretty early. And this is one aspect of this altered timeline. I'm really encourage you guys to pick up your copy of Three Prayers for Jacob because it gets better and better each time you start to follow these actions of what happened in the altered timeline. And in this altered timeline, Chloe is devastated, and she keeps asking the question, why would God let Jaden die when he was so close to accepting him as Savior? And Jacob is the one that I wanted to strangle him so much because God had given him this unique opportunity to, quote-unquote, fix his mistakes. Because he gave him that opportunity, he's like, well, you know, Chloe, God's there, but he's just not sovereign. And he's telling this to this young lady who was very gung-ho for what she believed. She was very much into being a Christian that wanted to win souls for Christ. And what that saying, how did that affect Chloe as she struggled with why Jaden died and her viewpoint about it?
Right. So whenever tragedy and suffering comes in your life, you really have only two options. One is you draw closer to God and seek him for comfort and strength. And the other is you kind of blame God or either think, okay, there is no God. So it pushes you away from God. So you either go towards God or away from God when suffering comes into your life. And so unfortunately, thanks to like her father's, like you said, his advice, she has already been kind of leaning or struggling in her faith because of what happened to Jaden. And then he kind of pushes her farther away from faith. And then she starts, like I said, just doubting that God is there because he did allow this to happen. And when, you know, someone was so close, you know, to turning to him.
And so it affected her faith to a point where she started turning her back on her faith. And he started to see his daughter change into someone that he didn't even recognize. And that was just one casualty of his prayer because he said, obviously God doesn't know what he's doing, so I'm going to change this. So now this is right again. And there's another casualty of the prayer, and I won't go into it. Like I said, you have to read it because it really starts to balloon into, oh, my goodness, this happened because this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. And it gets very interesting as you start to think about, okay, does God really care about the minutia of the day?
And there's one scene in this altered timeline when Chloe talks about what happened. She said all of a sudden the keys in her hand felt really heavy, like she was holding a brick. And her keys fell on the ground. She picked them up, and that delayed her from being in the car in the first timeline, in the original timeline, where she was killed, where she was in behind Jaden, whereas Jaden was behind her the first time. She was behind Jaden now, so she didn't get killed, but Jaden did, all because the keys fell on the ground. They got really heavy. And I like that aspect because it lets us know, or maybe you play around with the idea, just how complex this thing is. And we're talking about all we have to do is change this and everything will be okay. I really like that aspect of the story. What was your thought process behind something as minute as keys falling to the ground having such a big effect on the events of the day?
Well, I just thought about, you know, how little bitty things that happen throughout your day can, you know, change the course of your day or, you know, whatever. And then I thought, okay, well, you know, well, God can, you know, tweak just a little bitty thing that maybe, you know, make you a little later, maybe a little earlier, or to see something a little different, or to, you know, notice somebody you haven't noticed before who needs help. It takes just a very little on God's part to change, you know, what we need to be doing, what we should be doing, or, you know, what our destiny might be, or not destiny, but what our future might be. And so, yeah, I just kind of wanted to show how simple, you know, it would be for God to actually make some huge changes in people's lives. And also, as Jacob did when he prayed, he made some pretty big changes, but not in a good way.
I was thinking about that when you said how little things can make a huge impact in our lives. I was thinking about my granny, and those of you who follow me on Facebook, I talk about my granny quite often. Granny's granny. And one of the things that happened when she got into the rehab / nursing home center that she's at now, Vance, is that she had got a wound on her leg. And the wound had gotten so bad that it looked horrible. And she wasn't putting the medicine on her leg like she was supposed to. And it got worse, so we had to put her in the rehab. And then the family decided that she needed to be in a nursing home now because she wasn't able to take care of herself. And Granny is, she'll be 91, but really in December. Okay. So she's an older young lady. And I was so angry at first because I just wanted things the way they have been. I would take care of my grandmother. No one has to be here with her. I'm here to take care of Granny. But that happened. And I remember being so angry at the family for that decision. But come to find out, decision, because that's before the coronavirus hit. And the coronavirus had taken out the nursing home in Washington. You remember when all that happened? It took out the nursing home there. All those people died. And because she was in a place where she could get care, she was protected. She had people who would take care of her. She didn't have people, let's say if she had failed, let's say in the middle of the night, she wasn't laying there helpless. She had someone who would come see her. And I started to see God's provision in that. But at first, I was just so angry at the family for taking Granny away from my care and put her into someone else's care. But now looking back, it was the best thing for her because now, I don't know if you know, Vance, she got vaccinated and she's still doing okay. She's doing fine. She's cognizant, everything else. She has her good days and bad days. Like I said, she's 91 in December. So, but all of that to protect Granny. And I still have Granny with me when so many other people don't have theirs. And I thank God for that. But it was something small like a wound, and the wound was a small wound, and it got really bad. I will show you a picture, but then you wouldn't want to see that. So, but it got really bad, and that was led her to being protected from this greater travesty that happened in our society. So just something that simple as a woman that led her there.
And we never know. Yeah, we never know what's going to affect something else or, you know, play into affecting someone else's life, but God does. And so one thing I played around really a lot with how am I going to help Jacob realize or visualize, you know, what God is doing in our lives. And so the concept of a clock came into my head. Like, okay, it's kind of like we're each, you know, cogs or a gear or a spring or something in this huge clockwork, which is God's kingdom, which he's constantly moving forward. And so I had Jacob visualize this, what God was showing him as a clock, and with the second hand, you know, constantly moving forward. But when you look at the pieces of the clock, the gears were like missing teeth, the springs were a little crooked, you know, because he's working with us, and we are messed up, we're flawed, but he still is moving his kingdom forward, his plan forward, even though he's working through flawed individuals. And so I kind of wanted to envision that as a clock, and then also the gears are, you know, working together. So there's one gear touches another gear, which touches another gear, so it's kind of showing the effects that people have on other people near them.
I like the fact that you said that. I was going to ask you about that, so I'm glad you beat me to the punch, because when he sees this clock, there's a massive clock, but then he was drawn to one gear, just the gear that was right in front of him. And I like how you mentioned that. You almost alluded to the 1,000 years in heaven. There is a marking on that gear. At first, it was in a language he couldn't quite understand. And I looked at that. Well, he looked at that, and then he realized that was his name that was on that gear. And you see this one gear in this massive clock-like machine. And I thought, wow, that's clever, man. I really thought that was quite clever of you to show that it's all working together, but we don't even understand the magnitude, quote unquote, and using the term loosely, of the clock that's working. So I thought that was pretty good what you did there. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Vance, find an excerpt that I would like you to read for us. You can set it up so we can hear what Jacob has to say about what's going on in that particular excerpt. I'm going to read a few comments, too, as well. So if you want to weigh in on our conversation, you can. Just call in at 646-668-8485 and press 1 to be live on air. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
The Speculative Fiction Cantina is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guests.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. I have been enjoying our conversation with Vance Kessler about his book, Three Prayers for Jacob. And basically, it gives a very provocative premise. What if you had a chance to correct God's mistakes? At least what you think are his mistakes. And that's the premise of this book. And Jacob is given the opportunity to do what he considers just that, fix God's problems, because obviously God doesn't have it together. And what I love about the book is I love the sci-fi feel of it with the alternate timeline. I love how it has that feeling of Groundhog Day, the butterfly effect, The Edge of Tomorrow, and one more I can't think of right now. But it has those classic tropes about changing the past, but understanding that our human frailty affects how well we understand what those changes mean. And so what I'm going to do, Vance, I'm going to bring you on and have you read an excerpt for us. I'm going to mute myself, go ahead and set it up for us, and I'm going to go ahead and let you talk.
All right. Thank you, Parker. So you read a small piece of this already, but I'll I'll read a little larger context. And this is just from the very beginning of the book. He's skipping a few paragraphs, but mostly just from the beginning. So it starts, "The line of mourners clanked by like metal ducks in a carnival shooting game while I picked them off one by one. My weapon was a handshake instead of a rifle, and I wouldn't win any prizes. As the never-ending flow continued, I nailed an indifferent expression onto my face, locked away my tears, and shook their hands while responding to their useless platitudes. I wanted to shout that they were making things harder for us, but you don't do that at a funeral. Jacob, I can't imagine what you're going through, a familiar-looking lady said as she embraced my hand in both of hers. She appeared to be in her 40s and had blonde hair with highlights. Her hair colors were an odd combination and contrasted violently with her black dress. Seeing black made me sick now. That color meant death. A long black twisting snake of people waited behind the lady with highlights. Of course you can't imagine what I'm going through, stupid woman. You've never come close to having pain like this. Thank you, I said. I may have seen her at church. Her name was Maggie, Margot, Mary, or something like that. It didn't matter. A cough caused me to spin my head around. A gray-haired old lady stood looking at me. She only came up to my shoulder. I looked down the line of people and sighed. This would be a long night. She grabbed my hand in both of hers and patted it. Trust that God is in control. He must have needed another beautiful angel up there. I ripped my hand back from hers. My voice started quietly. You think God wanted to smash my little girl into a bloody pulp so he'd have another angel to play with among the tens of thousands he already has? My voice increased in volume with each word. You think God planned to kill my precious baby? Because what? He was lonely? The nerve of some people. I yelled now, but I didn't care. I could handle stupidity no longer. God didn't plan this. If he did, he's an idiot, or he's sadistic. That's the stupidest thing anyone has said all night, and I've heard a lot of stupid things. Trust me. And I'm skipping ahead a little bit in the book when he's saying his prayer out in the garden. I've been avoiding what I needed to do all week. My head fell into my hands with my elbows on my knees. The time had come to have it out with a true source of my frustration. I prayed out loud because the words refused to be imprisoned in my head. Lord, if you're listening, since the accident, I've been too angry to talk to you. Still angry with you. How can you be this all-powerful, all-knowing, loving God and not be able to stop my Chloe from dying in a senseless accident? From my perspective, you seem completely incompetent. Do you even care what's going on down here? I only see two options. You don't care what happens to us, or you aren't powerful or wise enough to stop bad things from happening. I still believe you created this. I don't have enough faith to believe in random chance caused the universe to come into being because there's too much order to everything, which leaves me with two options, or with the options that you're an idiot or that you aren't able to control what happens in this world. Maybe you went away, or maybe it's grown too complex for you with so many people. One jerk even implied that Chloe must have done something horrible to you to have you do this to her. I immediately blew him off. But then I started thinking, what if she had done something you didn't like? Would you punish her like that? That's even worse than you not caring a lick about us. I can't go that far. I keep believing you don't care what happens to us rather than that you are a sadistic, vengeful God. Well, I'm heading back in there, but not for you. I doubt you care what I or anyone else does. I'm going back in there to keep my wife from being furious with me. Plus, it's cold out here.
And that was an excerpt from Three Prayers for Jacob, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. I like how that ended. I like how you ended that excerpt right there because it lets us know Jacob's mindset, what's going on in his heart, and it's very honest and open. And like you said earlier in the broadcast, God's okay with us ranting at him. He's okay with us being angry with him. And he mentioned some great people did the exact same thing. Just name a couple of the patriots of the Bible who did the exact same thing.
Well, I mean, yeah, Jeremiah and Lamentations is full of that. But the most obvious is King David in the Psalms. He's quite often frustrated with God and He writes it down and even sings about it. And like we said, it's if you're feeling it, you might as well tell God that, because that's just being honest with him. It's not trying to be a fake in front of God.
And we did get a comment from Deborah in Florida. Deborah says, Parker J., I think this is interesting. In a way, he's lamenting, and there's nothing wrong with that as long as your lamenting turns you toward God and not away from God. Deborah, thank you so much for your comment. And then Melissa says, no, I do not wonder or worry about that. They're talking in response to your book. I know he is in control, and I try to live life according to his will, not mine. Living to your own will is what makes people miserable, anxious, and depressed. Melissa, thank you for joining in the conversation. And then Leela says, she says, oh, I love it when the very first paragraph tells me that this is a work I'll enjoy reading. Leela, thank you so much for saying that and encouraging my brother Vance today with his book. I know sometimes when we write, we wonder, is anyone going to read this book? Is anyone going to see it? Will they get the message? And then the Lord lets us know that our labor of love is not in vain. It is not in vain. And I'm so glad that Leela said that. So, Vance, in the few moments we have left, we talked a lot about the book. I felt it was really important for us to do that because people are hurting right now. And we hope that the words that we said are provocative enough for you to pick up your copy of Three Prayers for Jacob, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Now, go ahead and tell us what some of your other projects are.
So I wrote this book way before COVID, but I think it can definitely be a help during this time of suffering. But also another book that I wrote that I think gives us great hope is the one we talked about previously on your show is My First 10,000 Years in Heaven, which gives a fictional look at what the clues in the Bible tells us about heaven might be and gives us hope, an internal hope in that aspect. And that was based on my nonfiction book about heaven that I wrote probably about 10 years ago. And so, but in this particular series, Three Prayers, I've just finished reading through my first draft of the next book in this series, which is going to deal with a man thinking about being unfaithful to his wife and, weighing the odds of, or weighing the thought of, well, I must not have married the right one because this marriage isn't working out. The right one must be someone else. And then having God show him, a little bit different message and having him, stick with his wife. So that's a current book that'll be out soon.
I like that you're tackling that. I was thinking about how people have given up their whole relationship, the old flame, from on Facebook. You hear about things like that nature. Oh, because I used to be in love with this guy 40 years ago, I must still be in love with him now. Therefore, let me leave my wife for 40 years. So I can go back to him and be like, really? Oh, my gosh. There was a, and I know I'm going off tangent real quick, but there was a K-drama I was watching where the guy left for whatever reason, and she was with this other guy for like 5 years, and he came back, and he had been gone longer than they had known each other. So she knew him for like a year before he left. He was gone for 12. She's been with the other guy for 5 years. Then all of a sudden, she just dropped the guy that she was with for 5 years. And she tells him, oh, our love was stronger than anything he could ever know. I said, you only knew him for a year before he left. I'm glad you're tackling that topic. One thing I love about you, Vance, is that you do not shy away from these hard topics, and the Lord uses your ability to really explore them in unique fashions. And I'm so thankful that you'll hopefully give me another opportunity to showcase it on the show when you're ready with that as well. So in the few moments we have left, I would love for you to pray for us because, like I said, we talked about evil and suffering today. I know people are going through hard times right now. Recently, and I'll be posting on my Facebook soon, I did a post about prayers. And I noticed how when people in the Bible pray, there are all sorts of types of prayers. We have Gideon's prayer, which I focused on in that particular post because Gideon needed reassurance in a different way than some other people may needed it. And then I remember how Peter's prayer was very quick. He didn't have time to get reverential. He just said, Lord, save me. There's his prayer. There you go. Three words. I need help now. So, I talk about that in my blog post, and I wanted you to go ahead and pray for us because prayer is the order of the day. And when we pray, we cast all our cares upon the Lord. And that's something that Jacob learns throughout the story about what prayer is about, what that's what happens when you pray and things of that nature. So I'm going to go ahead and mute myself and pray as long as the Lord gives you to pray.
All right. Thank you, Parker. Our most loving and caring and compassionate Heavenly Father, we're so thankful that you do care about our lives, that you just sitting with our back in uncaring manner and just letting things happen, even though, you know, nature does typically carry on as you designed it, but you do step in when needed. You are reaching out and drawing near those who seek you. You do help those who want to know you and find you. And we don't always understand how you do that, but we do trust that you are doing that, and we're thankful for that. It's difficult sometimes, especially in the midst of something like we're going through with the pandemic and so many people dying that we might even know or friends of ours. But it's hard to sometimes for people to accept that that you are there and that you are in control. But Lord, if we didn't have the hard times, then to turn us to you, we would just rely on ourselves. And so these trials do help us to turn to you and to look to you. And we just pray that people are finding you during this dark time. And we pray that people aren't relying too much on vaccines to save them or medicine to save them, but they are relying on you to truly be saved, not just for this life, but for the one to come. And I pray for those who have lost loved ones during this pandemic or through other reasons. Please comfort them. Please help them to turn to you and be drawn nearer to you. Even though the things that are going on in the world are bad, a preacher once told me that anything that turns us to you is a good thing. And so if someone's faith is strengthened by something that happens in their life, even if it's bad, in the long run is good. And it's hard for us to have that eternal perspective when we're suffering through it, but that is what's true. That is what you focus on. You focus on our eternal future, not our destiny. You don't focus on us being comfortable. You don't focus on us being happy. What you want is for us to be with you for all eternity and at whatever cost that happens, we have to pay. And, of course, you are willing to pay the ultimate cost to make it possible for us to be with you in sending Christ. And through his suffering, we can be with you in heaven one day. And we're so thankful for that. And I just am thankful for being able to be on this podcast. And I just pray people will be comforted by this book and be drawn closer to you. And it's through Christ that I pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Vance, for praying for us today. We really, really appreciate you writing this book. I know people are going to be comforted by it. And I want to thank you for being on my show again. And I cannot wait to have you back and have you back real soon.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And we were talking today to Vance Kessler. He is the author of the book, Three Prayers for Jacob. It's available at Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. What I really enjoyed about this story is just how Vance crafted a very interesting story around a very, very important topic about pain, suffering, and evil. And when he did that, he created a scenario for all of us to follow that in the midst of our pain and suffering, in the midst of things that we don't understand, in the midst of not knowing what's going to happen next, when we do not understand why are we going through this problem, that we have to trust the Lord. And that's what Vance gives us in Three Prayers for Jacob. He gives, quote-unquote, Jacob an opportunity to fix God's mistake. And Jacob begins to realize that the mistakes he thought were mistakes was actually God's sovereignty. If you have an idea that God has given you to write, why aren't you picking up the pen and writing it? That idea that he has that's in your heart is uniquely for you to give to the world. Are you going to pick up the pen and write stuff? Thank you so much for joining for this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.